Okay, I guess we'll call the meeting to order. Roll call.
McGill?
Here.
Anderson?
Here.
Scarlett?
Here.
Brecky?
Here.
Youngberg? Absent.
Okay, moving on. In front of you, we've got an agenda for the meeting of today, February 17th. Any additions or that you wish to be put on the agenda or changes? If not, I'd like your motion to approve the agenda.
Some moved.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 In front of you, you've got the minutes, or may have looked at the minutes of the January 20th, 2016 Board of Adjustment meeting. Do I hear any changes to that, to the minutes? If not, I'll entertain a motion to accept the minutes as prepared.
So moved.
Have a motion. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Motion and second. I believe we need a roll call on those, don't we? Approval of the minutes?
Yes.
Anderson?
What did I say? Sorry. Yes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Aye? Aye. There you go.
McGill?
Aye.
Scarlett?
Aye.
Brecky?
Aye.
Okay. We really don't have anything on the agenda except and there's no one here as far as public comment, so I think we'll move through that and move to our some training that we've got set up for us.
Awesome. Thank you. At the last Board of Adjustment meeting, there was some interest raised in having planning staff provide some one-on-one training for you, so that's what we intend to do this evening for you. What I have will probably take about 20 to 25 minutes, and then at any time, if you see something or something piques your interest, if you have questions about it, if you want to add to the discussion, please feel free to do that. We're going to start off by talking about the state code of Iowa regulations, which provide the authority for the Board of Adjustment's existence and the role of the Board of Adjustment, as well as we're going to cover what the Board of Adjustment looks at when they review conditional use permit applications, various appeals, and we've got some other applications in the mix to show you. So, just starting off, again, the Code of Iowa, Chapter 335.2, provides the authority for the Board of Adjustment's existence. If you've heard the term being a creature of the state, municipalities, local government, or creatures of the state, the state legislature through the Code of Iowa granted the authority for local jurisdictions, the county in this case, to adopt local zoning. And then with that, it provides provisions for the Board of Supervisors and the city, it's the City Council, to establish a Board of Adjustment. And through the local regulations or local ordinances, the Board of Supervisors has the authority to establish what that criteria is, and we'll go through that. So, and it's a big first paragraph, but if you look at some of these things, some of you have been on Board of Adjustment, will recognize that we have, in the Story County Development Regulations, we have the authority, we have these regulations already in existence. So, talks about under 335.2, it says the Board of Supervisors may, by ordinance, regulate and restrict the height, number of structures, size of buildings and other structures, the percentage of a lot that can be occupied. I don't know if we have that requirement here, if we have that in Polk County, jurisdiction where that came from. The size of the yards, open space requirements, location, use of buildings, structures, and land for trade, industry, residential, or other purposes. And it also says may regulate or restrict or prohibit the use for residential purposes, tents, trailers, portable, or potentially portable structures. And the Story County Development Regulations do have provisions for that as well. And then the bottom bullet point is that these standards are for unincorporated Polk County. Cities have their own provisions under state law, which I think is 4.14.
Question for you.
Yep.
Regard to that. One of the things that we've run across here over time or two, the jurisdiction of us with relationship to also the cities, for example, Ames has a urban fringe area, or whatever they want to call it. And we had one at one time, I remember, Lynn, that was, it was to the north part of Ames, but it was still in their fringe area, and who had the authority over that. And generally we cooperate, but it'd be nice, there's a little clarification on that, and I think the city of Nevada has about a 2-mile limit or something like that around it.
Yeah, under state law, the county is required to notify jurisdictions that are within 2 miles of the corporate limits of proposed development, and to allow that jurisdiction to weigh in on the application. The Ames Urban Fringe Area Plan involves the city of Gilbert, city of Ames, and Missouri County. And it's a separate document, separate from the regulations, the development regulations. And this sets out what those proposed land uses are, what areas will be annexed, what happens if a rezoning petition is submitted, what process it needs to go through. It's a very elaborate plan. I understand it was approved like in 2006. And I've been here since August, and I've been before the Board of Supervisors probably 2 times. We've got a couple more things coming up with regard to adjustments that are happening within that Ames Urban Fringe area, which again is a 2-mile limit, but it's very specific between those three jurisdictions as far as what can happen, what can't happen, what's, more importantly, what's proposed for that area. But everywhere else, if we get a variance appeal, a conditional use permit, that's within a 2-mile zone of the city, we always send out that notification to let them weigh in on it as to whether or not, it's something they have any concern about, what standards they see, or what they would like to have, that type of thing. And just kind of sidetrack, one of the things that came up at our Citizens Advisory Task Force for the current comp plan that we're working on is whether or not we send notices to, like, school boards. And where I came from, that's not something that we did. We don't do it here. But it makes you think about why that's not being done, because schools, they typically tend to do planning on their own oftentimes. But a lot of this information would be very helpful for them to know if there's a 10-lot single-family development being proposed within their limits or their jurisdiction. So, that's something that's pretty easy for us. We're already sending out emails to various entities to add them to the list. Does that help?
So, my question is, we may give notification, but who has the final jurisdiction?
Like in the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, it's very specific about who has the authority, where the item goes to first, and it really kind of depends on what it is. If it's like just a zoning permit, an A1 district, that's Story County.
Okay.
There's provisions in here that made it really, it's very difficult to change the zoning.
Okay.
Especially if the land evaluation scores are high.
Okay.
It's discouraged. But outside of the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, it's oftentimes something that's worked out between the two jurisdictions. And I can tell you with this current comp plan that we're working on, we spent a lot of time. The planning staff and representatives from the chamber met with Story City, Huxley, Cambridge, trying to get familiar with what their planning was, where they saw growth in the future, whether it's residential, commercial, industrial, where their roads improvements were, infrastructure improvements. And through this process, we came up with an urban growth area. It doesn't have a specific designation. The cities that have those comp plans on their own would have specific designations. But the idea is that if we get a proposal that's outside of the city within this urban growth zone, that we would communicate with the city, find out if it's something that could or should be annexed, should the city's development standards apply over the county's development standards, do we need to work out like a development agreement, over time. It would start in the county, but over time it would annex, like within a year or something, that kind of thing. So that's being built into this current plan, and again, it's in draft form.
Okay.
So we're halfway through that process. Continuing with state requirements, state law says zoning regulations should protect health, safety, and welfare. Those three are. You'll see this language in about every zoning district in the state of Iowa and beyond. So all the regulations that we have should have a focus to preserving and protecting health, safety, and welfare of the citizens in the unincorporated area of the county. There is an exemption for agricultural properties and uses, but Iowa is an ag state, but it does say that whether it be for a farmhouse, farm, barn, outbuildings, other structures, it has to be adapted by reason of nature and area for ag purposes while it's being used for an ag-related purpose. And Story County has an application process that we often take applicants through. For our department, it doesn't come up until somebody is requesting to build a house or an addition or a building as to whether or not that property would be exempt. But since I've been here, I've reviewed a handful. The state provision doesn't really give you like a limit on the number of acres. And I can tell you that I've reviewed probably two or three that were under 10 acres. Every jurisdiction is different. Polk County, they classify a farm as being 70 acres or greater. And anything less than that was subject to review by the director of the department. And with that application submitted, you looked at how many acres were in production. Did they have outbuildings? What were the outbuildings used for? To store implement? Did they have livestock on site? And then looking beyond just that parcel, did that person own adjacent land, or did they own other land in the county? So, and that's similar to what our review consists of, except we don't have that 70-acre threshold. State law also says zoning regulations shall be made in accordance to a comp plan. You're not supposed to have zoning regulations unless you have a comp plan. Story County zoning ordinance was adopted in 57, 58, and included some land use features. There was an update in 2003. And then, of course, we're going through, this is really the first comprehensive plan which will address housing, transportation, land use, economic development or economic prosperity. And it's going to bring all these elements in to one document. The Conservation Commission is also involved. So it says the regulation shall be designed to preserve the availability of ag land, protect soil from wind and water erosion, encourage efficient urban development patterns, lessen congestion in street or highway, secure safety from fire, flood, panic, and other dangers. The Story County does have floodplain development regulations, permitting process, provide adequate light and air. So we're also looking at the vertical space, prevent overcrowding of land, avoid undue concentration of population, conserving energy resources, promoting reasonable access to solar. Story County's got decent wind energy conversion regulations as well as solar regulations. And then to facilitate the adequate provision of transportation, water, sewer, schools, parks, and other public requirements. Zoning regulations shall be made with reasonable consideration to the character of the area of the district, with a view to conserving the value of buildings and encouraging most appropriate use of land throughout such county. Zoning regulations and comp plan shall be made with consideration of the SMART planning principles. SMART planning principles were adopted in 2012. This current C2C plan takes this SMART planning principles into account, which are these 10 items. First part of this talks about agencies, local governments, other public entities shall consider and may apply the following principles during deliberation of all planning, zoning, development, resource management decisions. So collaborating, getting all those entities together to provide input into this process. Efficiency, transparency, and consistency. Making sure that, like C2C plan we had, this started in March of 2015. We had several open houses to solicit input. We're using social media. We're putting stuff, information on the county's websites. We're going through a second round of open houses. The last open house is at City of Ames Library on 22nd. So our process has been very transparent and open. Green, clean, renewable energy, efficient energy. Again, I mentioned the Story County Development Regulations address wind energy as well as solar energy. Occupational diversity, it talks about promoting access to education, training, entrepreneurial opportunities, establishment of businesses and locations near existing housing, infrastructure, and transportation. Most people want to work, live where they work, where it's reasonably accessible to work. Revitalization, this talks about, trying to use existing structures and facilities instead of looking to build new construction. Remediation and reuse of existing site structures and infrastructure preferred over new construction. Housing diversity, single family homes, multifamily. For the most part, what you're going to see in the unincorporated area is probably single family because we don't have the sanitary sewer that the cities have. But anyway, this does talk about housing options, providing options to people. Community characteristics gets into architectural style or design styles. I don't believe that the Story County Development Regulations get into that too much. I've worked in communities. I worked in a suburb of Carroll Stream, Illinois, where every adjacent single-family home had to have a different window treatment, a different roof style, a different facade treatment. It was called the anti-monotony design code. So that was part of my job, to make sure that no two homes were the same.
So does the revitalization number 5 and number 7, does that apply to like communities like Nevada and Cambridge? Or because now you're getting into city.
Well, and again, this applies if you've got zoning. You're supposed to have a comp plan, and you're supposed to, in your comp plan, you're supposed to consider these elements in your comprehensive plan. So, in Story County's comp plan, C2C, it's not just unincorporated. I mean, there's information in here that talks about housing inside, inside cities and so forth. But yeah, it's something that they're supposed to consider.
Okay.
Question. I notice
We've had several requests for wind turbines and that sort of thing over the years and what needs to be done with those. You mentioned solar. Oddly enough, I've been getting some requests for solar in my business as far as financing. Do you happen to know just quick regulations, what they are for solar? Do you have to have a...
I've got the regulations. It's primarily for, you know, if whether it's a house or a business.
Okay.
Is what that deals with. It's not, we don't have a regulation that deals with like a solar farm.
Right.
Or beyond a 5 or 10 acre parcel.
Mm-hmm.
Not yet anyway, but these standards do deal with private improvements.
Okay.
You know, something that you might see on a gable of a roof or on a roof of a structure or a standalone like a vertical.
Yeah, the one I was...
Pole and apparatus type situation.
One I've heard of, it's about a 300 foot long by 50 foot long, 50 foot wide plant.
Okay.
I mean, it's agriculturally oriented, so it might be, you know, I don't know if those rules, that exemption was in there, would apply, but just out of curiosity, something like this, and it's built on the ground.
Yeah, like this is plant for the purpose of creating electricity that will provide benefits to the community. I don't know that we necessarily have specific standards for solar. We do generally, provide power plants.
Okay, all right, that's fine.
But yeah, at least for right now, it's focuses on.
Yeah, that's right. It just surprised me.
Natural resources and ag protection, looking out for agricultural land, whether it's that, or cultural or historic landscapes, open spaces and recreational areas. Sustainable design that utilizes sustainable design and construction standards, conserves natural resources by reducing waste pollution, for efficient use of land, energy, water, air, materials. And the last thing is transportation, and providing different modes of transportation for citizens, whether it be, in addition to the vehicle, transit, bikes, bike trails, walking, pedestrian ways, those kind of things. Continue with the state requirements, the powers of the Board of Adjustment. It basically provides three different things. To hear and decide appeals where it's alleged there is an error in any order, requirement, decision, or determination made by an administrative official, which is what we mean. If a citizen wanted to do something on their property and they requested maybe something in writing, we put something together in writing. If they didn't agree that it was something consistent with our standards, they could challenge that, and that's something that you could actually hear before this body. Two, to hear and decide special exceptions to the terms of the ordinance upon which such a board is required to pass under such ordinance. And three, authorize upon appeal in specific cases such variance from the terms of the ordinance as will not be contrary to the public interest or owing to special conditions, literal enforcement of the provisions of the ordinance will result in unnecessary hardship. And this is where you're going to see your provisions for how you address and respond to a variance. Membership, it does say that the Board of Adjustment shall consist of 5 people, which is what we have. Majority of those members are supposed to be living in the unincorporated area, and that it's the term for the appointment is for 5 years. I think we had a question last time about the length of the term. So the state law says that it should be for 5 years. Role of the Board of Supervisors regarding the Board of Adjustment. Board of Adjustment is an autonomous board in that, for the most part, decisions that you make are final, with a couple of exceptions. One thing that they can do, the Board of Supervisors, is they can remand the decision after you've made it within 30 days which means one, maybe they don't agree with it, or maybe they want to understand more about it, so they want the board to revisit it again. Not necessarily change the decision, but it's a situation where something has come up that they want the board adjustment to take another look at it. And then the second thing is, anybody that's agreed with the decision that you make can challenge that decision, whether it be an applicant, a property owner, anybody from the general public. If they don't agree with that decision, it can be challenged in district court. There's a separate process for that. And those challenges are supposed to occur within 30 days of the actual decision. If we ever had a situation like that, we would likely be involved in the county attorney's office with the assistance of them. And I know some of you that have been here a while, have you ever, any of your decisions been challenged?
We've had some controversial ones, but I don't believe we've ever had any that have been challenged that I'm aware of.
In 17 years as a Polk County, we only got challenged once, and it was involving a communication tower. And the judge ended up citing in favor of the county because we was able to demonstrate through the staff recommendation, through the materials that were required in our ordinance, that they met their requirements and that there was a need for that tower. So, again, one in 17 years. And you hope to not have any, but sometimes it happens. We're now at the point where we're going to talk about local regulations, starting with conditional use permits. Conditional use permits are something that, depending on the zoning district, depending on the use, it's something that demands the staff to take a closer look at, and the planning and zoning commission and the board of adjustment. Things that require conditional use permit application seals are golf courses, indoor recreational facilities, communication towers, nurseries, rural salvage yard, child care centers, farms, retail or novelty, which is one thing. In March, we're going to have an item involving farms, retail, and novelty before the board of adjustment. Churches, wind energy systems, and dog camps. Those are just some of the items that require conditional use permit applications.
Can you talk, Jerry, about the process? Okay, if I want to open a dog kennel, I come to planning and development, and there's a problem. So does it go from your staff to the planning and zoning commission, and then they have an issue, and then it comes? I mean, can you just kind of walk us through?
Yeah, for the most part, it's something that requires a conditional use permit. There's an application that's required, and then a lot of times there's detailed standards. In addition to the application, you need a site plan that shows the parcel, that shows existing buildings, that shows proposed improvements. Is parking being proposed, right? Is landscaping proposed?
And the home and the owner of the property brings all of that to you?
Correct.
Okay.
The owner, or they'll... These standards don't specifically require an engineer or an architect to do those drawings. Sometimes we do get engineered or architectural drawings. But yeah, you have the application, the drawings, and then any additional information that's required. Sometimes there's details, specific things that are needed, like a lease agreement. And again, it's kind of just depends on what it is. With towers, we require an engineered stamp on the foundation, on the structure. They're going to add wiring to it. It should also address that, the structurally sound and electrically sound.
So if they bring it in and you look at it and you say, oh, that's fine, does it just go through?
That's the first step. And then some things require conceptual review. So not only is the planning and development staff looking at it, we're also meeting with other departments of the building the assessor, the auditor, engineering, environmental health. And they look at all the same civil information and provide input. And then through that process, we end up putting together a staff recommendation, a staff report.
Right.
And then, again, conditional uses go to the Planning and Zoning Commission first. They review it, make a recommendation, and then it comes here to this body.
Okay.
So ultimately, this board has the final say. And like I said, we've got a farm retail novelty use that we saw in December. We have support by the Zoning Commission. The Planning and Zoning Commission asked for more information to be submitted. And so we're getting ready to go before the Planning and Zoning Commission in March 2. And so Wednesday, it'll be before the Board of Adjustment.
So when the Planning and Zoning Commission looks at it and they have a concern, then it comes to us, or do they approve sometimes a conditional use permit just based on what they're looking at?
Their role is to make a decision about it, whether it be approved with conditions, or denied.
Okay.
And then after they're done with it, then we take it to the Board of Adjustment. Where I came from, conditional uses and variances went directly, after they were reviewed by staff and other departments, they went to the Board of Adjustment. Here, we have another step involved, and that's the Planning and Zoning Commission. There's seven people appointed by the Board of Supervisors.
If Planning and Zoning denies it, do they still make a recommendation to do that to us? So it still comes to us after?
Yeah, it would come to you. We would provide the PowerPoint presentation. We would inform you what the recommendation was, highlight things that came up in the meeting, but ultimately it does come before the Board of Adjustment. Planning and Zoning Commission is a recommending body.
Okay.
They're not exactly set up the same way that you are. They're not the autonomous board.
So if we make a decision here and it goes to Planning and Zoning and is remanded, it's basically saying they want us to take another look at it. They can't override our decision.
Only the Board of Supervisors
can
has
that.
The authority to remand.
Okay.
The Planning and Zoning Commission does not.
Oh, so the Board of Supervisors has a right to remand. All right, I missed that. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So this would be for the criteria for the Board of Adjustment to consider for a conditional use permit submittal. You're looking at these items. The first thing is compatibility, based on the use. What's its compatibility to the parcel? What's its compatibility to the adjacent properties? What's its compatibility to the surrounding neighborhood? Transition really gets into, buffering. With the location it's going at, is there already existing transitions or buffering from the use to like a green space, or maybe with this development proposal, they might be proposing to add landscaping or fencing or some other type of features to make this more workable for the area that's proposed for. Traffic, is this something that has minimal traffic, medium or high traffic? Does it involve trucking? Do they get deliveries every day? Where's the access points? Is the property located on a local road? Is it on for a collector or an arterial road? Parking, the Surrey County Development Regulations require for like non-residential uses to have on-site parking. So for the most part, parking within a road right away is discouraged. Signs and lighting, very specific standards on signs, lighting. For the most part, lights are encouraged to have shields, so that the light doesn't reflect out beyond the limits of the parcel, especially if it's a use that's adjacent to a residential use or residential zoning district. There's not supposed to be any trespass of that light to adjacent parcels. And then you've got the environmental protection requirements, not only with just, what is proposed for the septic system, but what's the impact going to be on the water, stormwater? Non-residential users are supposed to ensure that they're meeting the groundwater requirements that are addressed in the regulations. What's the impact to the trees or the woodlands? A number of different environmental factors. Two, the Board of Adjustment shall approve the development request unless it concludes based on the information submitted, and if completed as proposed, will. And it's these five things. Will not adequately safeguard the health, safety, and general welfare of persons residing or working and enjoying or surrounding property. So that's the first thing you're supposed to consider. Two, it will impair an adequate supply of light and air to surrounding property. Three, unduly increase congestion in the roads or hazard from fire, flood, or similar dangers. Again, Silver County has a floodplain development standard and regulation that we enforce. All proposed improvements are reviewed in accordance with the floodplain standards. There is a separate chapter, it's Chapter 80. There's a process set out in Chapter 80 to request a variance from the standards. Where I came from, we didn't encourage any development within the floodplain. Sometimes it's not possible to avoid it. So therefore, then you have to try to meet the standards that are set out in the regulations to develop inside the floodplain. But there is a possibility that this board could see a request from those requirements in the floodplain. My understanding is that hasn't happened very often. The fourth thing is diminish or impair established property values on adjoining or surrounding property. And last one, not be in accordance with intent, purpose, and spirit of the ordinance or Cherry County Development Plan, which is the common plan. And then one of the most important points really is the burden of persuasion is on the applicant. They have to be able to prove that they're not going to negatively impact any of those five things that I mentioned above. So the burden really is on them. And when they come here before you, that's what they're trying to prove or persuade to you, that their application won't impact any of these items.
And do they have to meet all five, or just...
They should. And part of our role as staff is to review what they've submitted, listen to what they have to say, and then help with a recommendation. But yeah, they should be able to prove that they can meet all those requirements. Variance is a little bit different. It says in deciding whether to grant a variance, the Board of Adjustment shall consider all legal principles. The first one is the unnecessary hardship standards. First thing he talks about, the land in question cannot yield a reasonable return if used only for a purpose allowed in that zone. Two, apply to the owners due to unique circumstances and not to general conditions in the neighborhood, which may reflect the unreasonableness of the ordinance itself. And the third thing is the use to be authorized by the variance will not alter the essential character of the locality. B, granting the variance will not be contrary to the public interest. And C, the spirit and intent of the Story County Development Plan and the Story County Land Development Regulations are protected. So both the comp plan and the development regulations will be protected if that variance is submitted. A lot of them typically tend to deal with issues or constraints with topography. If you're dealing with a front yard setback or a rear yard setback, there might only be maybe one or two locations that a building can go, and it might be an area that doesn't meet that minimum setback requirement.
But is that really an unnecessary hardship? Because that always seems to be the one that we come back to when we're looking at a variance is...
You know, part of that, your answer is maybe looking at the neighborhood. So if it's a situation where adjacent neighbors have detached buildings or a garage, or maybe it's a single family home and they want to do an attached garage and it's not meeting the setbacks. I think that's one thing that you could look at is the characteristics of the neighborhood to try to hone in on whether or not it's a true hardship. If it's a situation where other neighbors have attached garages or detached buildings for storage, I think it's something that you can certainly consider.
Okay.
This is the development review process, which kind of gets to your question then. This is on the county's website under planning development. And for the most part, you can focus on the left side of this. We're currently working on updating this, try to simplify it a little bit. But it talks about appeals that are before the director, on decisions that we render, conditional use permits, floodplain variances or variances in general, and basically you just follow it down. So you see that some of these have a carrot, a red carrot, and it says conceptual review meeting is not required. I mentioned that some of these things go to a conceptual review, which is in addition to the planning staff, you have other departments reviewing them. Where it's got that red carrot, those things that go to a conceptual review. They are reviewed by staff, planning and zoning commission reviews, conditional use permits, and then we always send out a notice to cities within 2 miles of a proposed development project, and then ultimately it comes to board of adjustment. I'm going to show you the application. This would be for an appeal to the director's decision. I hope I don't get any of those, but if I do, I'll be ready. Variances, application submits the information. They can do this online, by the way, and paper. Very nice. We are paid from this office, which I absolutely love. Stephanie, do you love it?
I do.
Getting used to it? It's kind of strange. You come to the office and you don't see any file cabinets.
Oh, wow.
We've scanned all those records, and so they're all archived. So we deal a lot with emails. But this is the application for the appeals to the director's decision, the variances. There's little check boxes for the fee, legal description, site plan, narrative. We like to have people explain what it is that they're proposing to do. And a lot of times that will generate a list of questions for staff and others.
So what do you charge to have somebody file?
$175 for a variance appeal.
Okay.
And it looks like $175 for a appeal to the director's decision.
Yeah.
Conditional use permits, new conditional use permits, and then to the right you'll see modifications. Our standards are set up such that you have new, minor, and insignificant. Insignificant are dealt with administratively, and where it's just something very minor that we do require application. Submittal information, there's a fee of $50. Those are handled administratively. There's been a handful of those. The one that's coming before you was treated as a major because of the things that were added to the previous conditional use. But those are $275 for new, and then they're considered minor or $125. This is information from the annual report that we did at the end of the year. Just kind of show you over the 3-year period, zoning permits, and we just really pulled out some of the more popular permits that we get. Single family homes, we received about 99. This was actually in November that we put this in. Actually, we get a few in December. But we're down a few from 2013. From 2015, though, that represented about 62% of the total single-family additions to single-family accessory structures. but again, those are the probably most common ones that we actually see. Ag exemptions, we wrote 11 letters based on applications that we received. Home business permits, if somebody wants to do a home-based business, they're permitted to do that generally in their home or in one detached building. It's limited to people who reside in the home, and then they can have one outside person come to work the business. But the idea is if they're meeting our requirements, that the neighbors won't really know that home business is being conducted. But we had four of those. Addressing, the county has the E911 addressing, so for whether it be a new single-family home, communication towers, any location where there's potential for the general public to congregate, whether it be like a parking lot, state, county, there's supposed to be an E911 address. It's a pole, we probably see the blue and white numbers. So we do review a lot of those. And then property research, that's if somebody wants to know if their land can be divided, we go through a pretty extensive review process, land evaluation review, to make that determination as to whether or not it can be divided. One, two, to do that would be like a plat survey, which involves having the applicant hire a land surveyor and or engineer submit a plat survey, or does it require something a little more involved that goes to like planning and zoning commission or supervisor review through like the subdivision plat process. Which gets to development cases. Last year, the Board of Adjustment reviewed, I think we met four times. There's two variances, one involving a fence height, one involving an accessory building. That one was denied. Two conditional use permits. One was a tower, and one was a dog kennel. Mm-hmm. And the rest of those items are subdivision plats. Some of those were residential parcel subdivisions, which allows like up to two development lots, and then minor subdivisions, which are up to four single-family lots. Major subdivision plats are more than four single-family lots. And of course, there were several ordinance revisions as well, involving decommissioning agreements with the wind energy systems. Accessory uses, there was an issue involving a gas canopy setback, that's ordinance cases. Adoption process, mm-hmm. and then the land development regulations. The last thing that I have, and you probably are signed up, Randy, I'm not sure, I know we talked about it on his initial training. The way we're set up right now is you go to the county's website, planning and development. There's a little tab that you click on for the Citizens Help Center, and you input your information on there, and you can tell the center whether or not you want a text or an email or both for Board of Adjustment or Planning and Zoning Commission, Board of Supervisors, Conservation Commission, any board or commission that you're interested in. You can do that for, and it'll send you the email, it'll send you the text, and all you have to do is go to the agenda, and that's where the items, mm-hmm. staff report, application materials have been. And I think it was, the intent was that the board members would print things off, if they wanted to bring things, and then typically we do the PowerPoint presentation. But I do want to ask how that's worked out. Would you like to do it a different way? We don't really provide a lot of information other than like pads, writing notes. Where I came from, I keep going back to where I came from, we did do packets. I have to say, I don't know that they were actually read during meetings. Each member had a monitor where I came from. They didn't have a single screen situation like that, so they were a lot of times looking at their screen. Mm-hmm. But I welcome any feedback to the current system that we have. If you have any ideas on something that you'd like to see be changed?
I can tell you that the way it's been, we have been doing it, I will generally read the packet, or if there's something I need to look at ahead of time before I get here, and then after that, I pay attention to what's up on the screen and what the recommendations are. All the packet does is give me an idea ahead of time what some of the basic concerns are and things of that nature.
So, has that been working for everybody else?
It's been fine for me.
Mm-hmm. And too, I think we've been providing the agenda. What I'm used to is a complete, like, all of the applications, the submittal information, this much paper.
Yeah, I've filled a few trees.
Yeah, so I see the process that we have here, and it's, you know, if it works for you, I think it's a great system.
The bank boards that I sit on, we used to have packets, thick ones. You'd go through them. And we've gone to electronic. The only thing that we provide at the meeting itself is the agenda, so that people can look at the agenda. And then most of them are on their laptop or an iPad, and they go through it that way. That works. It works in my arena.
And that's how the supervisors do it too. They all have their own devices that they use. Mm-hmm. So they're looking at our presentation. They also have their own device.
But sometimes with these meetings, I'm flipping back and forth because I might have read something on one page of the case, and I get a little further in, and it's easier for me to flip a piece of paper back and forth than it is to find it on my iPad or whatever.
Okay. Would that be like a staff report that you might
have? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So are you saying would it be helpful to have a copy of that or not?
Well, I mean, I print my own off. Okay. Whatever information you guys send me, I print it off.
Okay. And usually it's a few, two or three.
Yeah.
Depending on the items, some can get.
Yes.
I don't know. I like the way it's being done. If I want to print one off, I look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's all that I had prepared. If there's any questions or if there's something else you'd like to talk about, I'd be happy to do that.
Any questions for the staff?
So is there a problem? I debated even tonight whether I should just grab my laptop, you know, because I wasn't sure what it was going to consist of. And I thought, well, I can just take my notes and have them and store them in a Google Doc. If you're asking the question, you know, about these packets, if there's information that we need to see that isn't going to be on a screen and we're trying to conserve paper,
right.
I'm okay with bringing a laptop or an iPad, but I didn't grab it because I just kind of watching what goes on first.
I don't think there's a problem with that. Like I said, the Board of Supervisors meetings that I've been to, I know the individual members have their own devices. I'll certainly check on that, but I don't think there's a problem with that.
Can you just kind of give a general overview of the different kinds of zoning that we have and what they are? I know we have like A1 and AR1 and...
Yeah. A1 is agricultural district.
So that would be a strictly farm?
For the most part.
Okay.
Agricultural uses, but it does permit single family homes, cemeteries, public and private stables, parks and forest reserves. Those are listed as permitted uses, and then you got accessory uses listed.
Okay.
A2 is agribusiness. Those are businesses that have a connection to the farming community.
So like Van Wall, Brecky's. Okay.
Churches are in A1.
What's that?
Churches are in A1.
Actually, I think you're going to find that churches are permitted in certain zoning districts with the approval of a conditional use permit.
Okay.
But A2, agricultural, crop and livestock, farmstead, cemeteries again, stables, private and public, parks and forests, animal hospitals, anhydrous ammonia storage and pumping, fertilizer, ag chemical and seed sales, grain elevators, livestock feed and grain sales, seed research, liquid propane tanks, 2,000 gallons or greater. And then also storage, retail, warehouse marketing, processing of ag products, and the value-added ag production. And then you've got accessory uses as well. And of course, things that require conditional use. AR is agricultural residential. Single-family parks, cemetery, stables again, family home. As permitted.
So that's very similar to A1, except it doesn't have farms, right?
Right.
Okay.
And then R1 is the single family residential. R2 allows like buy tax, but with R2 there's a requirement that you have a common sewer system and a common water system for those developments. RMH is residential manufactured home district. Commercial light industrial district, which is the retail, light industrial type uses. Some manufacturing. Then you have HI, which is the more heavy industrial. You got petroleum products, cement, hydrated lime, gypsum. Similar manufacturing, concrete mixing, garbage, offal, and dead animal reduction, grain elevators, petroleum, forest products, refinery, salvage yard, slaughter offices, things like that.
That helps. Yeah. Can you send us a copy of that? Just send it to me.
It's on the county's website.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah,
I'll look there.
If you go to www.storycountyiowa.gov and then go to planning development under departments, on the left hand side is the development regulations. Okay. You want to go to chapter 86.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions?
Any other questions for staff?
This is helpful.
Yes, we appreciate it.
Yeah, interesting.
One quick thing while I'm thinking about it, you're mentioning March. I won't be here in March.
Yeah.
So,
we pray for snow.
Huh?
We pray for snow.
For you guys.
Yeah. Yes, definitely.
So if you, you may want to check and make sure you've got a quorum for March. So... Anything else? Any further comments by the staff? And the board?
Just I mentioned we're doing the whole C2C comprehensive plan. We've got one more open house scheduled at the library, the Dan Foss room from 6 to 7. And then after that open house session, we're going to be going planning and zoning commission in April. And in May will be final. There'll be a public hearing to adopt it, and then May for Board of Supervisors to review the draft chapters, and then hopefully approval in June at a public hearing.
Okay. Great. Yeah. I'll adjourn. I'll hear a motion to adjourn.
So moved. Oops, that's your pen.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. This was helpful.
Thank you.
Thank you.